Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Brenda Dennehy on quitting smoking, finding motivation, and training for your first marathon. Today's episode is one of those podcasts that I've been looking to cover for a while, topic-wise in particular, on quitting smoking. In all the episodes, 360 or so, we haven't covered this topic. And Brenda recently completed her first marathon, the London Marathon, in October. And her story from 2019, when she was smoking nearly 2 packs of cigarettes a day and couldn't run 2 kilometers, to now been a year and a half off cigarettes and having completed her first marathon, she was one of the perfect people to bring on to talk about this topic. So in today's episode, we unpack a lot of things when it comes to setting goals, finding motivation for yourself, especially if you're at the beginning stage of your journey or you're already up and running. You've gone past that 0 to 1 and you're having a couple of setbacks here and there where you're falling off track, you haven't quite reset yet, and you're looking to kind of get back on track with whatever goal it is, whether it's gym related, body composition related, running related, or whatever it is that you're looking to do. So in today's podcast, we talk about what she did and how she gave up smoking and how that led her to the gym and working out and running more, her couch to 5K to a full marathon, why running isn't just about fitness and it's about building confidence for yourself and the mindset that comes with it, and how Brenda uses things like the law of attraction and the power of positive thinking to completely flip her mindset. So if you are somebody at the beginning of your journey, somebody who was looking to quit smoking, I would definitely recommend you pass this on to any potential smokers that you know, family and friends. If you're looking to get motivation and how to find motivation, if you're struggling for it, or you're training for your first run, couch to 5K or marathon, you're really going to enjoy today's podcast. So without further ado, here is today's episode with Brenda Dennehy on quitting smoking, finding motivation, and training for your first marathon. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Brenda Dennehy. Brenda is a radio producer, journalist, and general fitness lover. She gave up smoking a year and a half ago and recently completed her first ever marathon. In today's podcast, we're going to unpack how to stay motivated when it comes to training for any physical goal like a marathon, and the mindset or tools needed to give up smoking or kick any bad habit for good. So I'm looking forward to talking all things motivation, quitting smoking, and training for your first ever marathon in today's episode. Brenda, welcome to the podcast.
Hey Brian, thanks for having me.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation since a topic I've been looking to cover for ages, and I know you jumped straight in with this and we've been chatting on DM back and forth since, is quitting smoking, because it's something that I haven't previously covered, and your story kind of goes hand in hand with changing your lifestyle from, you know, you were a 30-day smoker in 2019 and you couldn't run, you know, 2 kilometers to where you're at now. So I want to start with that. Talk to us a little bit about where you were at in 2019 and the transition over the last couple of years.
So in 2019, I was smoking 30, but I suppose I was nearly veering towards the 2 packets, which is just 20 cigarettes per packet. So nearly veering towards the 40 cigarettes a day. I suppose I was buying them duty free all the time, and I would obviously ask people to bring them home for me all the time. So the price of them was never an issue for me. So I would have been probably smoking even more that, you know, they was getting them for cheap. So I mean, the way I was smoking, I even would have had like 3 cigarettes before I'd even go into work in the morning. And my commute for work was like only 6 or 7 minutes, and I'd make sure I'd even have 2 cigarettes on the way to work. So even by like 8 a.m., I was after 5 cigarettes at least. So it was just, the addiction was just really, really strong. It was part of my everyday ritual. So you can imagine how easy it would be to get up to 30 cigarettes a day. So I had been always kind of like, I had tried the all running and stuff like that before and had gone to the all gym. But I mean, I was going doing the running. I mean, I was taking breaks smoking. I'd go with a running club and I was, when can I have my cigarette? When can we stop? I was, before I go into the gym, I'd have the cigarette. I was only doing these things to look like I was trying to better myself and maybe give up the cigarettes, when I actually had no real goal to actually quit them. And I suppose just things were getting so bad, like I couldn't even barely run up the stairs anymore because I was out of breath. And I'd say it was the winter of 2019 and it was February, just before the pandemic hit. And I remember just saying to myself, would I go running with the running club I had been with before? And, you know, I said, sure. They were saying, oh, maybe you should start off with the Coach to 5K. And I had said, no, sure, why would I do that? You know, I had ran like the 11 minute mile before and stuff like that. You know, they said, yeah, but you're smoking an awful lot now, so maybe that would be better for you. So I was like, no, I like you, of course. I'm better than the 5K, you know. I don't need to go back to that. So we were out running one night and I was in the 11 and a half minute mile and I actually just had to just stop and I actually had to walk all the ways back on my own. And I remember being so upset and just started crying and actually just lit up a cigarette in the middle of it that I couldn't even keep up with them. So then I actually went on and joined the Coach to 5K and they were actually passing me out as well. So I had done the Coach to 5K, I'd done all that fitness before, but my fitness had gone down so much that I was smoking such a quantity of cigarettes a day. I couldn't even keep up with the even nearly the walkers of the running group. So there was alarm bells ringing for me right away. So I knew I had to do something.
When did you start smoking?
I started smoking. See, it's funny because I never wanted to be a smoker. There's no person out there who was a smoker who ever aspired to be a smoker. I was late. I was my final year of college. I was in Mary Eye and I lived with six girls and five of them smoked. And we'd be there sitting down just watching the soaps in the evening. And I might say just I'll have an old cigarette there. I joined them. And before I knew it, there was kind of like a box being bought and I would have smoked a few every few days. And then before I knew it, there was a box maybe every 2 days. And then sure as hell, I was on a box a day, but I suppose I was 23, 24. And then it was just continuous addiction again, just buying them abroad, kind of just anywhere I go abroad, I'd be smoking. And I did kind of quit the odd time, but it was always like, oh, I quit. I like less quantity of cigarettes, but I just never really wanted to do it. You'll say you'll do it for all the other reasons, like you'll do it for your family. You'll do it for maybe a boyfriend you would have been seeing, especially guys. What I found guys that I had been seeing, they really hated being a smoker. So a lot of the time I actually would have hid that I was a smoker from them. Like it's ridiculous because anyone can smell cigarettes off you. So I suppose then I was continuously smoking, I suppose, for 11, 12 years nonstop a smoker. So I was quite late. And I suppose none of my family actually smoked either. Like my parents never smoked. Either of my brothers didn't really smoke. My sister, she was kind of a casual enough smoker. But I was the one where the addiction really, just became so much of my everyday life. So I couldn't see myself without them.
Yeah, one of my best friends is a smoker and I laugh because he's always telling me that every time he tries to quit, he's like, well, quitting's the easiest thing I've ever done. I've given up six times now. I'm like, It says everything you need to know about the addiction for smoking. What changed then? What was your why to make that jump? Was that the kind of pivotal moment on the run where you realized there needs to be a change here? Or was it something else that kind of finally got you into that mode that, because a year and a half now, you're well over, you know, that 6 month period, that year period, that 18 month, 24 month period, like you're working towards that, which is normally people relapse well before that. So you're well out of the kind of escape velocity for the majority of people when it comes to kind of relapsing back to cigarettes. What was your why? What a change that made you kind of get to the point now that you said, right, I'm quitting it. This isn't conducive to the lifestyle I want to live, or, you know, insert reason here. What changed, Brenda?
I think when I had been with the running group and I couldn't believe that how unfit I had actually gotten. I suppose my ego was at me, like, you know, I kind of came in back to the running group kind of full of, you know, I'd be well able for this and there'd be no better to me. I don't need to go back in the 5K. My ego was one of the things. I refused to go running with the group anymore. So I was like, I can do it on my own. Maybe it's just I'm a better runner on my own. So I remember running down the road in Ballincollig, totally just saying, I'm going to do this on my own now and feck the group and I'll show them. And my intention was to go back to the group and be well able to even run with the 9 minute milers or the 10 minute milers. And I remember running down the road. It was a cold, cold, damp Tuesday night and I couldn't even do 2K on my own. And again, I was walking back up the road again and a fag out the mouth again. And I just kind of stopped and looked at myself and I was like, what are you doing? You're 34 years old. You've your whole life ahead of you. You had made this promise you were going to give up the cigarettes when you were 30. I did give them up for a couple of months because I had heard this. I don't know. I don't think it's true. But I heard if you give up fags before you were 30, that it didn't affect your lungs and all this. Like obviously not true. But then I was like, you would give them up when you were 30 for a couple of months. You can do this. Like, there is determination in you. What is wrong with you? And I think I got so frustrated with myself. And I just, it was just even the running back the road again. And I think it was just tears. I just knew I had to do it. I think I saw the 30-year-old me making the promise to myself. And here I am 4 years later. And I felt like I had let everyone down, even myself even more. And I just felt like a failure. And I just, you know what? I just said to myself, okay, you have a trip to Tenerife. The cigarettes are cheap there, because I'd associate every country that I went to. Oh, they have cheap cigarettes. They have cheap cigarettes. And, you know, like Abu Dhabi, you'd get 600 cigarettes for such a price. And I was like an encyclopedia of the cost of cigarettes all around the globe. Like I would, I even had a cigarette calendar. If I knew someone was going away, they'd get a text message. Can you bring me back cigarettes? So I knew I was going to Tenerife, and it was the middle of February 2019, just before the pandemic hit. And I said, listen, after that holiday, I'm going to smoke my brains out on the holiday. But on the 29th of February, and I picked, it was just a random date, 29th of February, I'm going to pick that day, and that day is going to be the one for me. That's when I'm going to do it. So I smoked as much as I could over in Tenerife. And you know what? I was actually smoking so much that I actually felt ill. I actually felt sick. And instead of bringing home like 7 or 8 cartons, I just brought home one. And I said, that'll be it. And tough luck if you don't have enough. You can just buy them at home. But the 29th of February is the day you're doing it. And I told everyone, Brian. I told everyone. I even said it on the radio. I said it to like 70 or 80,000 people. Anyone that I met, I had to tell them. Because telling them would mean that I couldn't back out of it. Because again, the ego. How could I let people down? Like if I put all this pressure on myself, some people might think it wasn't a good idea. But for me, everyone knew. Like there was no getting away with it. You know, if I was seen out with a cigarette, people like, oh, sure, I thought you were giving up the cigarettes, you know. So I think the first thing about anyone kind of giving up the cigarettes is tell people so they'll keep reminding you. So I had told everyone, I had set the date. It was a Friday. I had this idea in my head that I was going to have to go home from work early. I was going to have to hibernate for the whole weekend and I wasn't going to see anyone. So I was going to have the first 3 days were going to be the worst. And but sure as hell, then the Friday I was actually fine in work. I think the lads in work were kind of like, okay, we're waiting for it to snap. It didn't snap. The Saturday, what I did with the Saturday was I actually went out for a walk and attempted a bit of a run because I said, sure as hell, a bit of fitness here will help the head. And then on the Sunday, I was actually up in the cinema with my friends in Great Farm. So that'll tell you how much I was ready for it. I was done with them, you know. And of course, it was like, of course, you know what? I felt actually even that there was 3 days in on the Sunday night, I was going to the cinema and with my friends, I was usually, oh, I need to have a fag before we go in. I need to have a fag. And I felt a sense of relief even walking into the cinema that I wasn't outside in the cold smoking the fag before I went in.
Yeah, that accountability, I think there's so much in that. You know, something similar I did back in 2018, again, slightly different journey when I was running the Marathon de Saab. Like I posted on social media so that I couldn't back out. I was like, I've told everybody now. I was like, shit, I'm going to have to go and do this. But I'm curious, just because you mentioned there about smoking your brains out until the 29th of February. And I know smoking and diet is very different. I have a chapter in the new book about, you know, avoiding the last supper. You know, so my clients, before they jump on a program, some people will have the mindset that, you know, I'm going to binge on my favorite foods because I'm not going to get them for the next 6 weeks or 12 weeks, you know, and that's not my philosophy when it comes to nutrition. But I'm curious, when it comes to cigarettes, did that help you in that context in terms of, you said you made yourself sick, you were smoking so much. Did that help? Did it get it out of your system? Or is that something that if you're offering advice to people, you would tell them to take a different approach to what you did?
I just think I had this analogy of what it was going to be like. I was like, it's going to be this and it's going to be hard. And I had this big build up where I should have just really let it be. And whatever was going to happen to going to happen, because I was like, you're going to have headaches. You're not going to be able to meet anyone. You're going to just hibernate and not see anyone. I was even like, I was someone who was like going into war because I'd stocked up in a load of food because I was like, so you can't be going to the shop now in case that you meet anyone, you'll eat the head off them. I had told my family not to even be contacting me. I said I won't be able to speak to anyone on the phone. They were all like banned. Everyone was banned. But I was ringing everyone and I was going to sit. I was asking people to go places. So I suppose when I look at it, and would I advise people not to make sure you smoke as much as you can? I probably wouldn't. Like I remember I actually, when I was in Tenerife, I did smoke. Like my friend looked over at me and every few minutes I had a cigarette and I was like, come here now. I said, I'm giving them up soon, so leave me at it. But then when I got home, and I think I had another week left when I got home from Tenerife, and I actually think it was a Thursday night I was giving up, and I actually think I threw away 2 fags. I think I chopped them up. Because I was like, what are they going to do for me? What are you going to do for me? It's now or never. I was half thinking, it was like an episode of Father Ted where Ted actually got the stapler and he started stapling the cigarettes together. Would I do that? Or like, would I be getting the butts and start smoking them? But I was like, I was done. I think you have to give yourself time and pick a date and then you accept that date. But I was done.
I love that. You mentioned there, you know, calling people, going to the cinema. It sounds like you use a lot of kind of distraction techniques, which I'm a big fan of when it comes to kicking any habit, whether that's food related, smoking related, or just bad habits in general. You know, if it's phone or, you're addicted to, you know, insert vice here. The list is endless. Were there other tools that you use that help you quit? Obviously, that was one of them. Was there any other kind of major things that were contributing factors to your success?
I suppose I was going, as is someone who, you know what, it's hard to describe, you know, I'm one of these people who never saw myself as the gym person, because in my head I was like, oh, the gym person has this perfect body and the gym, I was thinking of the gym bunnies, you know, the atypical gym bunnies you have in your head. And I felt very self-conscious that I couldn't go to the gym, but I knew that fitness and health was going to really, really help me with giving up the cigarettes. So for the first few weeks before the pandemic hit, I did start going to the gym in Ballincollig, and it actually really helped it. Like, I was getting up really early in the morning to go, and that time where I would have spent smoking the cigarettes, I was actually in the gym. And I didn't realize that exercise actually makes you feel good. I didn't realize that people actually go to the gym to feel good. I thought people were just going to the gym just for the sake of going to. I didn't know about these endorphins or anything like that. So once the penny dropped for me that, like, this is giving you a bit of a buzz here and you don't need your cigarettes anymore, that's when my love for the exercise actually developed. And I suppose walking with friends then was another one. And actually another thing that I wasn't doing before I was actually smoking was reading. And I actually love reading now, personal development books mostly. And I suppose journaling and all that kind of stuff. And they always say to kind of keep your hands busy and all that kind of stuff. So obviously there was probably going to be stuff on the phone. So, but again, I don't like to be on the phone too much, but just keep busy. And I suppose I kept really, really busy at work. And then actually, luckily, believe it or not, then awfully that it happened, the pandemic, we were the world was turned upside down on, like, I think it was 17th of March. So I was actually only 2.5 weeks off the cigarettes, pandemic hit. And I was thrown into the deep end at work. Like, no one, the whole world didn't know what was going on. And so the work, I didn't have time to think anymore. So the timing of it really helped, because we were never busier at work, never busier at work.
And I definitely think your mindset plays a role there, because it's very easy to flip a pandemic and make it an excuse. I had, I know you follow each other on Instagram. I think I had Steve Griffin, Steve's weight loss, talking on in January. Yeah. And he was like, look, every excuse under the book with the pandemic, you know, if it's mental health or your fitness or smoking. So I definitely think mindset plays a role there. And we will double back to personal development books and the ones that have impacted you. But just to stick on the fitness and health and how that helped, which is really interesting, because, you know, you broke the habit, you know, any basic habits broken into that cue, routine, reward. And you obviously replaced cigarettes with exercise, getting the endorphin hit, and that helped. How did that transition out then to a marathon? Because there's a big difference between a couch to 5K to a marathon. Like, they're, I know they're within the same field of kind of expertise in terms of running, but the distance, you're talking 5K to 26.2 miles. Was a marathon something that you always wanted to do? Was it something that was always in your head? And how did you kind of go from going to the gym, going to that 5K, doing those runs, to a marathon? How did you kind of transition into that? Because it was the London Marathon this year, just to set context. What date was that, Brenda?
The 3rd of October.
3rd of October. So pretty recently. And talk us through that. Talk us through where the marathon came from and where and how you decided that that was going to be the next goal you set for yourself.
Well, with the marathon, I actually believed, it's amazing how your thinking does change, because before I would have been not negative, but like, I would have seen things, you know, I would have, rather than seeing good in every day, I'd see kind of the bad in every day. Whereas now I try and see the good in every day. Like, I'm so much more of a positive thinker. Like, my mind is so much more clearer. So I remember years ago, I was like, I remember seeing 26.2 on a gym wall, and I remember going, kind of saying, you know, oh God, I wouldn't mind to run an all marathon. No, I was still smoking, you know, I wonder what it'd be like. And I remember someone in the gym me saying, you'd never be able for that. You'd never be able for that. And I was like, you know, you kind of get, your thinking goes that way. Sure, I'm never good enough for that. Especially us Irish people, we all think we're not good enough. In fact, my brother, my older brother, he's done several marathons and he's done several Ironmans. But I suppose I looked at him and sure, Niall, he's my brother. He's built in a different way and he's fit. And sure, I'm not this fit person or anything like that. I'd never be able for it. So I continued with the gym and I could feel the effect it was doing for me. And then I was kind of doing all the running groups and everything had shut down because of COVID. And I suppose I was living on my own and I needed this sort of a release, you know. So I suppose my runs, I'd say I'll go for 4K run in the morning, 5K run in the morning. First thing in the morning, I get up really early. So I get up, I was getting up that time around 5. I'm a morning person. I love getting up in the morning. So what I was doing was I was going for like these little 5K runs in the morning before work. And I'd be in such good form for work, even though the world was like in the middle of the pandemic. I was actually feeling really good about myself. And I was like, Jesus, this running is, it's doing something to make my concentration so good. My work ethic is good. My relationship with my family and friends. I'm happy in myself. And I just kept at it. And I didn't really at the time follow any kind of program or anything like that. You know, I think a lot for me is in my mind. You know, I might have woken up one day kind of saying, you know, will I chance 10K today? Will I chance it? So in my head, I'd say you're going to do 10K. So I would do 10K. So then I kind of, I think it was last December, I said I was going to run from Ovens, which is near Ballincollig, to Blackrock Castle. And that was 20K. And like the 20K was a big, massive deal to me. And I told everyone, I'm just going to run 20K. I've never run further than 20. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it without stopping. So that was my thing. I was going to do it without stopping. So I'd been that time 10 months off the cigarettes. And I couldn't believe it. I actually did it. I remember taking a picture outside of Blackrock Castle. And I was so elated and so happy with myself. And my friend collected me. She goes, I'm not a sweat out of you. And I was like, I just feel so amazing. I was so buzzing. So then the new year, I continued with the running. And then I said, listen, I'm going to run 30K in February, 28 February, to mark 1 year off the cigarettes. So instead of smoking 30 fags a day, I'm going to run 30K. I had never run further than 30K. Was I training to go up to 30K? Like, was I doing 20Ks here and 20Ks there? No, I just knew I was going to run 30K and that was it. So I set out my little plan around Ballincollig, the regional park. I was going to lap it 3 times all Ballincollig town as well. So gearing up to it, again, I told everyone about it. I said I wanted to write an article about it. So again, the pressure was on that I was going to do this. And then, sure as hell, I went off. I did it. I felt great after it. So my idea then was, I said, sure, April, my birthday was going to be in April. I might run a marathon for my birthday. So then I was like, I don't know how that happened. So I said, I'll do a half marathon for my birthday. But what happened next was I was up at my friend's house a couple of weeks later and her friend was home from London and she goes, oh, well done on the 30K. I said, oh, yeah, thank you. And she said, my friend is actually running the London Marathon. And straight away, I was like, okay, when is that? How's she doing it? How can I do it? And something went off in my head and she just said, she's doing it through charity. It's too late. Sure, all the applications are put through. They've got their places. It's too late. You won't get it. And I was like, can you please tell me who your friend is? I just want to chat to her. I just need to track her down and see if there any other information I can get off her. So for some reason, I was hell bent on getting the details off this girl. So tracked her down on Instagram, got the details. Sure as hell, I went through this charity. Someone had actually pulled out. So as luck would have had it, they actually gave me the place. I just had to do a bit of fundraising for it. But then all of a sudden, I was actually given like a place in the London Marathon. Had never ran more than 30K. Didn't know like what kind of a training schedule I was going to do. I knew I had, that was around April. So I did have over 22 weeks to do it in. And obviously I told people and a lot of people were kind of like, sure, you wouldn't be able for that. You know, like you've only ran 30K. Like this is serious. Like, and I got the whole, you know, people's toes fall off and people end up with lifelong injuries and someone died in the marathon there a couple of years ago. Sure, what would you want to be doing to run a marathon? And, you know, you're only running around Ballincollig Village. It's a different ball game. So I was hell bent on doing it. I knew I was going to have to do it. So again, told everyone I was wanted to do it. The training leading up to it then, like what could have went wrong, did go wrong, But again, like I said, the head, I read that book, How Bad You Want It. I don't know if you've read it, Brian, but what that book, Muscle Over, Mind Over Muscle, what that book did for my mind in running this marathon was, it just was a game changer. I suppose it just, the positivity that I was going to do it, I suppose, to explain what had happened in the lead up to it, I had got a certain few injuries. I had to have an operation on my toe and I was out for a couple of weeks. So I suppose I missed 11 weeks out of a 22-week training schedule. And some may say I shouldn't have done it, but I had to do it. It was like this, I don't know, this calling. I don't know if you've ever gotten anything like that in your life. I think like for the one you did, you know, this, you shouldn't be, it's like your body is nearly telling you that you're not able to, but your mind is telling you you need to do this. So it was kind of a situation like that. I couldn't let go and I just went ahead with it. And yeah, it happened. And that's the lead up to it, really.
You touched on a really interesting point there. And I think this will definitely connect with the majority of Irish listeners in particular. I think UK as well. I don't think it's as bad in the US. I spent time living in California and this wasn't necessarily a US-based thing, but that you wouldn't be able to do that. You know, you shouldn't be thinking about that. That negative mindset is, unfortunately, in some populations, particularly in Ireland, it's quite prominent. Again, I've grown up with it. I've had it around me in my ear for as long as I can remember. How did you block that out, Brenda?
I completely had to change my thinking. A big one for me is, you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with, is a huge one. So any negativity, any negative friends, I not dropped them. I just didn't spend much time with them or didn't speak to them much. I spoke to positive people. Like my brother was a big involvement in it because he'd be one of the most positive people I know. My own family, my own friends are all very positive. Of course, you'd still, like I was still getting it from people in the lead up to, you know, you shouldn't be doing it. You're not able for that. And are you crazy doing this? But I think I was like a woman possessed. I was like, I'm going to change like what people think, you know, I'm going to be one of these people that other people will see doing a marathon. They'll aspire to do it, you know, that they'll say, Jesus, if Brenda can do it, I can do it. And I think I have achieved that. And a lot of people have said that they've signed up even to half marathons, even marathons. And if I've, you know, made other people do that, then that's a massive achievement for me. But I think it's hard to ignore when anyone is saying anything negative to you or not so nice to you. And obviously, when you hear it, you will get a bit of a setback. But I suppose I was so hell-bent on doing it and wanting it. I suppose I would have gotten over it. I would have like dissected what they said. But you know what? I said I knew what was right for me. And again, I just stuck with the positive people and stuck with my own positivity as well, you know?
Yeah, I think the advice I normally offer to people on this particular topic is guard and block out the noise depending on your own confidence level. Like when you're at the very start of a new journey, you know, I used the example when I transitioned out from being a primary school teacher to start my own business. I kept going back to teaching because I wasn't confident. So when people suggested I was doing something stupid and silly, it in my head, I was like, oh shit, maybe they're right, you know, and that's because my confidence wasn't high. But as you start to, you know, repeatedly keep promises to yourself and become more confident, you end up blocking out that noise. So just for people listening who are in a similar starting point to where Brenda is or in some variation of their own journey, it's important to realize that that noise becomes easier to block out as you gain more confidence over time. And then with that, Brenda, how did you find the actual marathon? I will double back to what kind of got your mindset to that point, because I think that's what's so inspiring about your story. One of the reasons I wanted to chat was because of, you know, 2019, smoking 30, nearly 2 packs of cigarettes a day. You couldn't run 2 kilometers before you felt sick. And to the point now where you're a year and a half off cigarettes, you've ran your first marathon. Like, that's a really inspiring thing for people to take that message. And you will have people off the back of this podcast sign up to a couch to 5K or a half marathon or even a full marathon off listening to it. But how did you actually find the marathon?
The marathon was funny then, because I had had an injury on my left leg and I had kind of gone to physio for that and it seemed to be okay. So I was like, I'm going to go for it now. There's no turning back now. I remember even being on my Instagram stories just as we were about to take off and I was like, there's no turning back now. And I was just going for it. But within the marathon itself, okay, so within 13 miles, my right leg, I actually had a pain in it. Okay, so it was actually, I ran with a sore leg for 13 miles. But having done that and got through it and not giving up. I think I actually was kind of nearly grateful that my leg was actually hurting me, because I went to this place in my head, and I think you might understand it, and I only said it to my brother the weekend as well. I went to this place in my head that I've dig deep, that I've never been before in the middle of the race. I can't even describe what it was, but it was this place where, like, you cannot give up. Like, you have to give every bit of this your all. And this inner voice that I've probably never, ever experienced. And not for a flinching moment did I ever say to myself, you know, you'll have to take it easy there. You're not going to be able to finish it. Even if I hadn't posted on Instagram, even if I hadn't said it on the radio, I was going to do it. I knew. It was like there was another person inside of me telling me to keep going, keep going. Now, obviously, 26.2 miles, you know yourself, it's a journey. Like, you're going to get tired. But overall, with the crowds and everything, that part of it, amazing. The people, the atmosphere, like, you know, there wasn't an anti-climax to it or anything like that. It was like, I can still feel the atmosphere that day. I still get shivers thinking about it. It's 3 weeks old now since it happened, and I'm still so grateful looking over it. It was the most amazing probably day of my life. And I know that might sound odd, but that for me, what it was, a sense of achievement and the sense of not giving up. And I think the sense of, you know, if you put your mind to something, you can achieve anything you want to. And if I can run a marathon, then anyone can do it. And it's even upped my game even more. I think the main thing for me with the marathon was as well, then I was afraid of what might happen after. Because then again, Brian, you know yourself, there's some people, they loved saying, you know, watch the downer after. But I'm a planner, I'm a plotter. Like, I'll always be going for the next high. So it's actually something that I thought I'd never be able to do either. I'm planning to do now something in my wildest dreams. I actually said a few months ago, like I said, I'd never be able for a triathlon or anything like that. And I'm actually signed up to do a half an Ironman. And I don't know how to swim yet, but like I did it years ago. I'm going to get swimming lessons in 2 weeks' time. So I have to train myself how to swim. I have to obviously ride the bike. I have to run. But the marathon has given me that belief that I know I'll be able to do this. And then it will give me the belief that I know I'll be able to do a full Ironman eventually. But that's what the marathon has given me overall. It's given me this, a different life, a completely different change of mind, like that I can take on anything in this world.
I love that. It's one of the reasons why I love these conversations, Brenda, because on the outside, this is why podcasts, I think, are so powerful, and conversations. I know you're on the radio. It's the same kind of idea versus snippets on Instagram, which is great for inspiration and motivation. But when you see a marathon, people think, oh, great, they're fit, they ran a marathon, good job. Or someone that's in great shape or has lost a load of weight. You know, I've had Tricia Lewis on the podcast, Steve Griffin, yeah, Amanda Valentine, people who have lost hundreds of pounds between them. And people think that, well, that's great, they physically look really good. But it's the mindset that shifts. It's the confidence that comes. It's the transition and the how it transcends into other areas of your life, where you're feeling happier and more confident and your relationships are better and you're feeling more motivated and you're more energized and you're jumping out of bed in the morning. I'm like, these are the things, yeah, that keep people lit. I'm like, a marathon is great and running is great, but it's all these other things that you get, yes, from it. And I love that. Brenda, how did you develop that? We touched on books earlier, and I know you're a big reader now, and you journal and you put up a lot of this on your Instagram as well. What were some of the books? You mentioned one earlier that had a very positive impact on you. What were, if you had to name two or three over the last 18 or 24 months or so that have had the most positive impact on your mindset, what ones would you jump to mind?
So I suppose the one for me would be How Bad You Want It. I think it's Matt Fitzgerald. That was the game changer for me actually running the marathon. My leg had actually gotten really, really sore. And I actually had said, even on my Instagram, and I had told everyone, even on the radio and everything, so I'm not doing the marathon anymore. I'm not able. My leg isn't good enough. But then again, the mind was at me so much. And then I actually went back to read the book, and the book speaks about, you know, athletes being injured and, you know, running with injuries, cycling with injuries, swimming with injuries, and overcoming things with the power of the mind. So that was a massive one for me. Obviously, I am going to say The Secret, Brian, because I am massive into the law of attraction. I know some people, as I say sometimes, they think it's hocus pocus stuff, but the law of attraction is massive in my life. So The Secret was definitely one. The Magic, of course, I'm going to mention that. Asking It Is Given. I don't know if that's a one, that's another one on the law of attraction. And The Positive Mind, that's another one. And then I suppose another one for me would be Vex King, Good Vibe, Good Life. That one as well. That was very popular there a couple of months ago. So my personal development ones are all like probably based on positive thinking and law of attraction, and whatever you put out there, believe, receive, you know, you can get back into your life. So that's how I live my life on a daily basis. Like first thing when I get up in the morning, even before I turn on my phone, like my eyes are nearly glued to my head still, I get my journal and I write down my manifestation 3 times every single morning. And if I don't do it, I feel like there's something missing in my life, you know. I even feel like I nearly have to bring it around me, the journal, during the day. And I also love to use the head plan. Again, that's like my Bible of goals. And never underestimate the power of the pen. That's what I say, like the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do my manifestations and my affirmations. That's something that I'm a big, big believer in, particularly when I'm working towards a very specific goal. With the law of attraction, is that something that you've always drawn in terms of a positive psychology philosophy for your own life? Or is that a more recent thing in the last few years since you made the transition, just out of curiosity, because of obviously the changes that you've made over the last 2 or 3 years? Was that always your mindset, or is that something you developed?
I would always have been an outgoing, happy kind of person, but practicing the law of attraction and all that, that's only, I had been using it a couple of years ago. And then, of course, I just gone down a unhealthy route. And I suppose I wasn't very happy in myself. But I suppose in the last 2 years, I've gone back big time. And I suppose my favorite topic to talk about to friends is about the law of attraction, because I just love to help people and I love to see people do well. Like I love nothing more than a buzz, even to talk on Instagram or even to talk to people in person about the law of attraction. And this is how you do it. I'm even having like a little book club with my friend about it, you know, going through all our goals and aspirations during the week. And I just think you can't beat the power of positive thinking, because obviously we're actually like negative by default. Like I wake up in the morning at 4 a.m. and I actually think to myself, how am I going to get through the day? How will I manage it? But then by 5 o'clock, I'm actually in a way better headspace because I've done my manifestations. I might even do a meditation. I'll always do like even a 5 or 6 minute meditation also in the mornings as well. And that kind of clears the mind as well. And I'm just always open to positivity coming towards me. Obviously, there's some days that they're not so good. But as I say, there's something good in every day.
Yeah, the mind over mattress is a big thing too when you're trying to get up in the morning, because sets up your day. For someone that was struggling, Brindy, with motivation then, for those who are listening, what would be the advice that you would offer for someone who's struggling for motivation and whatever their goal is, whether that's to do a couch to 5K or a half marathon or a full marathon or join a gym or go to a personal trainer or go to a class or sign up to a program? What advice would you offer to someone who's struggling for motivation?
Definitely tell people you want to do it. Say it out loud. Write it down. Tell someone. Pick a date. Pick a date is always the number one. Just, I think once you put a date out there and you try and stick to it, the chances are that you will either go to the gym class. You mightn't be going forever, but if you don't try it, you'll never know. Also, just have the bit of hope, have the bit of positivity. And my big thing is just always surround yourself with positive people. Like think of the 5 people you surround yourself with. And if they're negative, then you do probably need to hang around with like different friends. I know myself, I have been around a different circle of friends, and I look back on the person I was at the time. I wasn't going to the gym. I was going to the cinema, eating a load of popcorn, chocolate, eating takeaways every few nights. Now I'm around people who love their fitness, love their running, love their hiking. And that's me. Like they love their reading. I'm all that person. So obviously just be mindful of the people you surround yourself with.
With that advice, and I couldn't agree more, I think, as you said, the Jim Rohn quote, you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with, is one of the most applicable things that people can adopt into their own life. If you could go back 2 years to the start of this journey, before you gave up the cigarettes, before you went from a little bit of a casual runner to finishing and completing your own marathon, and now looking to the next step towards a triathlon, outside of the advice of surround yourself with the right people and guard against that and be mindful of it, what other piece of advice would you offer to yourself of 2 or 3 years ago if you could go back? Just because there's a lot of people who are in that starting point now, what would be the biggest thing you would say to them that would yield potentially the most benefit based on what you know now?
Would you mean like we'll say within starting running, starting the fitness?
In general, it might be something completely different. You know, I think the tip you give there that surround yourself with the right people is amazing, whether that's a fitness goal, a business goal, a happiness level goal. You know, if four of your friends are miserable fucks, like you're going to be the fifth. Like it's a very, again, I was there, I was in that bracket. I'm using myself as an example there. I'm like, why am I so miserable? I'm like, well, all my friends are giving out about everything. And I had to kind of change that, make that change a lot. Long time ago. So advice I would have offered myself, you know, in my early 20s would be, you know, what you said, guard against who you spend your time with, because those emotional vampires will take from you and you will become like them if you spend too much time with them. What would you say to yourself if you can picture back, you know, pre-Tenerife, pre-complete Last Supper, smoking until you couldn't smoke anymore, you know, you had a kind of an aspiration that you wanted to maybe get back into the running, get a bit fitter, but what would you say? What do you think would be helpful advice for you then when it comes to, you know, setting goals or getting started or anything outside of the lines of just surrounding yourself with the right people? What advice would you offer yourself or someone in a similar position?
Well, okay, I suppose the advice I would give myself 2 years ago would to stop being so hard on myself. I would have been someone who'd looked in the mirror and insulted myself every few, you know what, every time I would have passed the mirror, I would have had something negative to say about myself. So I was in that kind of a headspace. If you even have one bit of hope, even if it's inter your actual mind, you know, if you say, I wouldn't mind running a marathon, or I wish I could turn the wish into will. That's what I would say. You know, there's no point wishing. Say that you will, because anyone is able and capable for anything. And I always really do say it, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. So I suppose turn the wish into will. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I've just got one final question off the back of that, Brenda, because it's really interesting. You talked about, you know, self-insulting. Like I did a podcast, a very popular one in the early days of the podcast, I think it was 172, about dealing with mental health, that one of the reasons that outward comments didn't bother me that much was because the stuff I told myself was way worse than anyone on the outside could tell me. Yeah. And, you know, which is a catch-22. It means you're impervious to stuff on the outside, but it means that you're living with this horrible person who's insulting you all of the time. And until you build up that self-love, self-compassion, like, you know, how do you expect anybody else to see you a certain way if you look at yourself in this insulting way? When did that stop for you, or when did that start to decrease? Was it as you started to progress in your running journey, and or was it down to the positive psychology you were consuming, the people you were surrounding yourself with? When did that start to decline in terms of intensity and to the point where, you know, you don't do that anymore? What was that kind of process like?
I think it was probably around a year ago or so, because I remember just looking at myself in the mirror, and I remember just, it was before a night out, and I just remember like constantly just go, oh, I'm so ugly and I'm fat here, like this stupid fat talk, like I am not, you know, the way us women are, like we're ridiculous when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I insulted every single physical appearance of myself. What I noticed was I never kind of insulted the emotional me or the personal me, you know. I was like, I always knew I was a good person. So I was kind of like, okay, stop insulting yourself on the outside, because you love, if you like yourself on the inside. I don't know, am I there loving myself yet? But I certainly really like myself on the inside. So I just had to say, you know, what is inside you and outside has to match. So no, you know, I don't insult myself anymore. I won't go around looking at myself, go, oh my God, I look unreal or anything like that. But you know, I'm happy in myself. So you know, it's shining within and it's shining without for me. But I just think this, even this negative talk, even I just was more conscious of people. Oh, look at me, the state of me now tonight. Oh, look, even, you know, the way you'd say, hi, girl, how are you? You look great. She'd be, oh, the state of me. Like, I don't do any of that anymore either, because like, why am I even insulting myself, like, without even noticing it? I just think the brain is very sensitive. So it actually takes everything in. So I just stopped it completely. And if I ever catch myself doing it again, I just stop myself straight away. And I actually ask other people to stop doing it themselves. It's like, why would you insult yourself? Do you insult other people? You know, and they'd say no. I was like, well, why is it okay to insult you yourself? So I think they're kind of like, oh, okay. But, and then they kind of stop it. But it's hard work. Like, you know yourself, these things don't come overnight. It takes a long, long time to work on yourself. And like working on yourself, it's an everyday progress, like day in, day out. I'm reading, I'm journaling, I'm writing stuff down, and it's work in itself, but it's work that I love.
Yeah, it's such useful advice for people, because it's funny, you would never speak to somebody else the way you speak to yourself.
Never.
You, never. Like, it's unbelievable. We were on different sides there. For me, it was always the emotional side. I was always questioning my character, and it was, you know, you're a fucking loser. You can't do anything. Yeah. You can't set these goals. You can't do, you said you were going to do this and you didn't. Mine wasn't so much the physical appearance side. It was the emotional side. And I think it shows up in different shapes and forms for people. But the answer and the inoculation for it and the cure is the same. You have to develop tools, like you mentioned, Brenda, that will help you: journaling, reading, surrounding yourself with the right people, setting small goals and building confidence by keeping promises to yourself over time. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's taking the long-term view with this and realize that if you're at this starting point now, you can get to the point where as you said, where you like yourself. You might not be at the loving yourself place yet, but where you like yourself. And the next step to that is where you get that loving and true peace and true inner peace, which I think is the end goal for a lot of us. I can't speak for everybody else, but definitely was the end goal for me when I started the journey.
Yeah, well, the one thing that I always say to people is, would you go for a coffee with yourself? And they kind of look at me and go, would you go for a coffee with yourself? That's kind of like how I rate, do I like myself? And for me, I'd say, oh Jesus, yeah, I definitely go for a coffee with myself. So would you go for a coffee with yourself, Brian?
I would now. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I would
you
now.
Would
know.
Would
yeah.
you have before?
No, I no. See, no, you would, which is a great question. It's a very powerful question.
Yeah, that's question. How I always see, like, check in with myself going, do you like yourself now? Would you go for a coffee yourself? I'd be like, yes, definitely. I'm not sure, yeah. Oh my God, that's my Siri.
Oh, that's no problem. We can keep that one, and that's totally fine.
She's not coming for coffee.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. Siri's like, well, here's the best place for coffee. You can go on a date with yourself, Brenda. Brenda, I really enjoyed this conversation. I think it's really inspiring what you're doing. The message you're putting out there for people, where you came from to where you are now to where you're going, is very, very exciting. For everyone that's listening and wants to check out more about you, Brenda, where's the best place for them to find you? Is it Instagram? Is it somewhere
Instagram,
else? Any links?
Yeah. Brenda's Bits. Brenda's Bits
on Instagram. So I will link that in the show notes for the podcast. Go check out Brenda's page, especially if you were looking to get inspired, get motivated, and just have a little bit of a laugh. Your Instagram stories are really funny.
Yeah.
So I think even just for the little bit of comedy that's on there on top of the inspiration, it's really good, really, really good and enjoyable.
Thank you so
much. Brenda, thank you so much again for your time. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks so much, Brian. Cheers.
There you have it, Brenda Dennehy on quitting smoking, finding motivation, and training for your first marathon. Really glad we got to have this conversation. A topic I've been looking to cover for quite a while on the podcast is quitting smoking, because I know there's a lot of you out there who have either been through that journey yourself, are on that journey, or have family members and friends who are trying to give up cigarettes. So definitely pass this episode on with them if you think it will help. I think hearing from somebody who's gone from A to Z, from 2019 to smoking nearly 2 packs a day, not being able to run 2 kilometers, to being 1.5 years off cigarettes and having completed her first marathon, is really, really inspiring and can really help a lot of people. Again, being the leader. I talked about this a few weeks ago with Dean Karnassus, where he talks about leading by example and taking inspiration from other people achieving things. And I think Brenda's a great example of this. So that's everything from this week's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and I will catch you all next Monday.